Welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we are your weekly teacher council meeting, and we talk about how to be better teachers of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm Kevin Jones.
And I'm Julie Hilliard.
And Julie, recently we had an episode focused, and in fact, you did this one. You focused on Sunday school presidents.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, if you're not a Sunday school president and you maybe have maybe read the title for Sunday school presidents, and you may have read over that and thought, well, I'm not a Sunday school president, forget it. And you skipped over it. Don't go back and listen to it. There's so many great things that came out of that. We're going to be doing more and more that are episodes that are focused on specific roles or responsibilities. And they still have great ideas in it for even if you're not in that role. So make sure you listen to that. But because of that, I was talking to a ward Sunday school president, and he had some issues that he didn't know how to deal with. And I want to talk about that issue and one way to think about it, one way to think about his issue. But before I actually get there, I need to set it up and make sure that we understand a few things. So this idea that I'm going to share here and we're going to talk through and kind of wrestle through is an idea I had about 20 years to write a book on, 20 years ago to write a book on, and I haven't done it yet. I've written the other book, but I think I am actually going to make this my second book because this had such a broad application in life overall that I think you could take this principle and apply it to everything else and realize, oh, we're totally getting that wrong. We've got that wrong. Oh my goodness. When you look at it from this lens, it starts clearing things up. So let's start this way. Julie, what is the difference between accountability and responsibility?
Okay. I guess I think about accountability as meaning like the buck stops with you. Okay. But you can take ownership for anything that's yours. So responsibility, I think of actually responsibility as also being kind of a proactive principle. Like you taking responsibility, and I think it oftentimes goes with initiative. So it's taking ownership, but then it's also taking ownership such that you often move things forward. You're responsible for something.
But you can't use the word responsible or accountable in your definition either.
Okay. So you have ownership for something. You take ownership for something. So I'm thinking about ownership. And I want to use accountability when I say that. But then when I think about accountability, I think there's almost a return and report aspect to accountability, and responsibility can be more of an internal thing.
Okay.
Am I anywhere close?
So yes, you are. I have asked hundreds of people this question.
And do they flounder?
Very few can really answer. I don't want to say correctly answer it, because a lot of what you said are true. Some of what you said is true in some certain circumstances, but not true in others. And it depends on what context you're talking about.
Like I use these words all the time.
I know.
Like, and I use them like in, now you're making me like insecure. You're going to have to like, alleviate
some of this. Not my intent.
Oh man.
Yeah, we do. We use accountability and responsibility interchangeably all the time, but there is a definite difference, and understanding the difference has a huge impact on life in just about every context. So let's go through this. You talked about action, right?
Yeah.
And how you felt accountability was more action.
Responsibility.
You said responsibility was more action than accountability.
I feel like accountability is like a return and report type thing. And so it's more of a, like I think about accountability as you are accountable for certain criteria that are set out, where responsibility, there aren't necessarily criteria. You just take ownership for things. What's the word that I'm looking for? There's a different word that describes what I'm getting at. And it's like, can I just take 2 seconds? Cause I'm like, really?
Go for it.
Okay. So one of the things that drives me insane, my son and I are working on his applications right now for college. And if anybody has ever done the BYU application,
it is a multi-day, many, many hour process going back and forth with sons and daughters and trying to figure out.
Yeah. So this is the thing. I'm like, Liam, this is yours. And he's been taking responsibility for this, right?
Okay.
And he is accountable to get this done. Like he's accountable to us. Like I'm saying
he's accountable to you.
Yeah. Like I am holding him accountable for making sure that he gets certain things done.
Mm-hmm.
But so here's what happened though. There were a couple of snafus. The deadline is today.
Oh.
So he discovered a couple of snafus in this past week that are going to take time, more time than he has to unravel. So Liam is going to miss the early application deadline. And last night, Todd and I were talking about this. Todd's out of town and we're talking on the phone and I'm angry a little bit because I feel like this was his responsibility. And as he was reporting back to me about it, he was assuring me that everything was done. And so when it came time for this accounting, right, he was blaming. He was like, this was outside of my control. This wasn't something. He wasn't taking responsibility. So I don't know if I'm using the words correctly, but like I'm trying to kind of sort through this experience based on that. And you're laughing. So it means that I'm either doing a really bad job of using the words or that I don't know what's happening, but I am seriously frustrated about this process. And we came to a really good place and I actually feel really great about it. So I don't want it to seem like I'm mad at my son, but it was a conversation about Liam. He was blaming, frustrated, and it was kind of victim-y. And I know we do that when we're emotional. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, what do you have control over? And so that was part of the conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is yours that you can control? And then he's like, this, this, and this. And I'm like, okay, and when could you have controlled that, right? And so we had to kind of go back and talk about the places where he was blame shifting and what he could have actually done, what he was actually responsible for, and what he owned basically. And he couldn't shift that onto anybody else. And I think that that's a huge problem. I have a real big kind of pet peeve with people who don't take responsibility. And so that's hard for me. And so am I using the words right in that whole, I'm going to stop talking because I feel like you need to teach me how to say this right. But the experience might be a good example to teach it from. I don't know.
It is such a perfect example. The reason I was laughing was because this example is perfect for what we're going to talk about today. And I'm wondering if when we get done with understanding this whole thing, if you will look at the situation with Liam completely differently after.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
I don't know. In a good way. No. This
I hope in a good way because I'm like, maybe I'm going to beat myself up because I handled it badly. I don't know.
No. Okay. Please give yourself a lot of grace here because it is, if we don't understand the difference between accountability and responsibility, it is easy for us to just go off of what we knew and what we've done always, right? And how we have taken care of things and how we interact with people and hold each other accountable or, you know, assign responsibility or whatever it may be, right?
Yeah.
Once we truly understand.
Like, how do you teach responsibility and accountability?
Yeah. Right. And that's what we'll be talking about as we get into your example. So, okay. Let me give you, so that what you had was a great example. Let me give you another example of accountability and responsibility. Actually, two examples. First example, when a child is born, they cannot do anything on their own and continue to live.
Right.
As parents, we have to do everything for them. Over time, they take on more and more of those tasks, of that thinking, of those, whatever it is. And to the point at some point where the parent no longer does any of it and the child is doing all of it.
They're independent.
They are independent. So we think. But okay. Yes, that's that. I don't think that's how we act a lot of times, though, right? We say you're independent, sure. But
no, for sure. But I think that, like, I'm trying to fill in the word, like you were saying things and describing it, and I'm like, responsible, but then you didn't use that word.
Mm-hmm.
As you're talking, you're like, they become increasingly and you're like, capable of da-da-da.
You're anticipating me saying that. And I purposely didn't say any of those yet. Okay.
I know, you're driving me crazy.
Okay. So when these children grow up, they need to learn specific things, right? So when Kelly and I, when our oldest was, I think it was in second grade, we decided to homeschool. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we decided to homeschool is because our number two got into school and was just a teacher's aide for the most part. She caught on, she understood it was done, and she wasn't learning anything.
She's bored.
Completely bored. So we pulled them out, taught them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At some point we have put our last two. We have eight children. So we put our last two into regular public schools. So tell me, who is accountable for children's learning? The school?
If you say who's responsible, I feel like I can answer that question better, but I don't know if I understand what accountability is anymore.
So let's put this little definition in here that will help us understand. Okay. The accountable person will receive direct consequences.
Oh.
Good or bad. Okay. Good or bad. Not necessarily just bad, right? But good or bad. So as a parent.
Is the child? Because the consequences are going to hurt them the most. Or is it the parent?
It's at that stage, because remember, the parents are in charge a lot when they're young. They're in charge a lot of what is happening to the child. So it's kind of both. But the child doesn't know, and nor can they understand that that they have accountability for that. So it's really on the parent at that point to make sure that their children are taught.
So, but if accountability is by definition, who's going to bear the brunt of the consequences, in this case, you also have to understand their capability to take responsibility.
To take on the accountability.
Yeah.
Their capability to take on the accountability.
Okay. Their capability to take on the accountability. So when we talk about who the consequences affect, it's not going to affect the teacher. It's going to affect the parent. More because, and the reason we wouldn't say it affects the child and the child is accountable is because of their capability at this point.
Correct. Right.
Okay. That's a little complicated.
So let's say that Kelly, she is homeschooling.
Okay.
At that point, at that point, she has, and I'll just say in context of her, she has accountability and responsibility for that. She has taken on accountability for this, which she naturally has, but she has also taken on she could assign out the responsibility to someone else. Mm-hmm. At some point, she puts the kids into public school. Now who has the responsibility?
The teachers have the responsibility, like public school has a responsibility, but Kelly still has the accountability. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Because if the public school, if the teachers don't do their job and mess up with our child, they're going to go, sorry, that sucks. Yeah, that's too bad. That's it. We could go back and say, you are bad and you deserve some consequence. But in the end, it's us. It doesn't really, does not directly hurt them. It directly hurts us and our children.
So would it be appropriate to say that the accountable person is the person with whom the buck stops. Like Kelly could still influence the responsible party because she ultimately is accountable for what's going to happen. That's my book model, like my drawings that just fell over because my dog knocked them over. You guys.
That's funny.
It's ridiculous. I'm so sorry. So am I saying that right though?
So
like, I feel like I'm still messing it up a little bit. Like this is, let me ask you, I feel like you need to simplify this more because if I'm struggling with it,
yep.
I think other people might struggle with it as well. I think we need to give a definition to both. So let me make sure I understand your definition of accountability. It is the person who's going to bear the brunt of the consequences.
There you go.
Is that the only definition you're going to get?
Who gets the direct consequences?
Who ends up with the direct and is it because the buck stops with them? Like, is that an appropriate definition or
not? I've never thought of it that way, but let's go with that. Let's go with that.
Okay. So the accountable person is the person with whom the buck stops. And part of the reason for that is because they will bear the consequences.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. So think about the age of accountability.
Okay. Okay. Right. Oh, okay. Good point.
Right.
So the age of accountability means, so thinking about it spiritually, that the consequences of not repenting, of not having the gift of the Holy Ghost, which you now have, you become accountable for that gift, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for using that gift appropriately and for keeping that gift with you. Is that kind of what we're talking about
here? Yep. So at the age of accountability, which is 8, mm-hmm. the child is now accountable for their own sins.
Mm-hmm. Like before that, it's the parents.
Before that, it's Jesus Christ.
Oh, duh.
Right? Yeah.
Let me preach false doctrine real fast. That was not very thoughtful. I don't know what just happened. Duh. I'm sorry. Before that. Correct. Right.
So they have to have the capability to be accountable. And then once they are accountable, they bear direct consequences of actions. Of their actions.
Okay. I can't wait for you to define responsibility right now.
Okay. Responsibility is the ability for someone who holds accountability. Oh boy, this is going to get confusing. And gives them, let's say, an assignment. That goes towards their accountability.
Okay, say it again. We've got capability, responsibility, and accountability swimming in my brain right now.
Okay, so let's go back to the teacher's example, all right?
Nope, say it one more time first. You've got to say it one more time first, and then you can go back to the teacher's example.
Responsibility is an assignment from the person who is accountable to fulfill some action or capability or some... I'm going to say some action or outcome.
So could you be both the accountable person and the responsible person?
Yes.
You could.
Yes.
Okay.
So unless you didn't want to. And for think of an employer. I own a business. I am accountable for this business and I'm also responsible for everything that happens. However, I can have an office manager and the office manager is responsible for these things.
Mm.
If my office manager fails in those things, she's like, nothing actually directly happens to her, but it directly happens to me because there's loss of loss of revenue. There may be feelings that I have to kind of figure out with clients and they got a little ruffled or whatever. She doesn't have to deal with that. I'm the one who has to deal with that.
So would it be appropriate to say that you can delegate responsibility, but you yes. cannot delegate accountability.
Exactly.
Okay.
You cannot take your accountability and have someone else, here's a word, subsume it.
Not assume, subsume?
Subsume. What's that mean? Basically, take it under their wing saying, you have accountability, but you know what? I'm going to take it from you and make it part of my accountability. And that is basically what subsume means, to pull away from and to take it and to hold on to it yourself. So that's an important point that we're going to come to a little bit in a little bit. But before
we can actually see where this might be going when you add the word subsume.
Yes.
Okay, that's really interesting. Okay.
A huge piece of this. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, let me look at some of my notes. Because accountability and responsibility are different.
Uh-huh.
The way we may look at a particular task could be completely different, and our attitude toward that task can also be completely different.
Oh my gosh, I just had an epiphany.
Okay.
So think about Liam's thing. You talk about Correct. The way we look at it and the way that we approach it and consider it and all of that. Liam has accountability, not me.
Correctamundo.
So me trying to hold him accountable is wrong.
Correct.
And that's part of what maybe I think that naturally he felt accountable because he knew that this affected, the consequences of it affect him more than they affect me even.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he implicitly understood that, but my behavior.
You were trying to subsume some of his accountability.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. This was part of how I was trying to motivate him.
Correct. Exactly.
Like when we try to hold people accountable, are we actually subsuming some of the responsibility?
Right. Very, in a lot of instances, correct. That is, not always, but a lot of instances, yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let me just share something super fast.
Okay.
Stephen M. R. Covey wrote a book very recently called Trust and Inspire.
Okay.
And this is one of the things that he's talking about. He's talking about our job is not to hold people accountable, to manage them. Our job is to inspire them, to light a fire under them, and to have trust in them such that they are accountable themselves.
Why? Okay, let me ask why. Why does he say that we should not try to hold people accountable?
So I don't know that he actually uses that phrase, but he's basically saying that we limit people when we do that.
In the case with Liam, how are you limiting Liam when you are trying to hold him accountable?
I think in two ways. One, I think that when people feel less accountability, then they are less motivated and more inclined to try and pass blame.
Very good. Right? Yes.
Versus when you feel and you recognize your own accountability, you're more invested and you reach your own potential and you do better. You get better results because of intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation.
Yes.
I'm getting this, aren't I?
You're nailing it.
It like started to click just when you did the subsume thing.
Okay.
That is so, so interesting from a psychological perspective.
Yes.
As well as a spiritual perspective.
Yep. Both. They go together, which is, you know, they everything spiritually and psychologically actually do go together. But when in things like this, when they just match up, it's just like, oh, the angels sing and the heavens open and the rays shine down. You're like, oh, my goodness. And that actually totally works. And it does.
Okay, I kind of want to read you this one line. Hold on.
Okay.
Let me just it is so okay. So I just underlined it and I know exactly where it is. Okay, right here.
Wow, look at you go.
Okay. I know because I knew I marked it. And so this is what it said. It said, "Trust and Inspire is the new way to lead. Its goal is to unleash people's talent and potential, to truly empower and inspire them rather than to try and contain and control them. It's about trusting people to do the right thing and inspiring them to make meaningful contributions. It's about connecting with people through caring and belonging so that we and they can successfully respond to our disruptive world." And this is the part. It's about then connecting people to purpose by making the connection to accountability, right? Mm-hmm. So that they feel inspired, not only by, you know, what the organization, group, whatever they are trying to accomplish, but also by a sense of purpose, meaning, and contribution in their work. And I think that the contribution part goes back to making a connection with accountability. Mm-hmm. That was like kind of the,
I hope he gets to the point where he says, you can't take on something along the lines of, you can't force them. You can't take on the response or their accountability. I mean, what he's saying, he said the new way of leading, that's actually the only way of leading.
Well, and that's another kind of the adult. Point he makes. He's like, we've messed it up. And he's talking about how the paradigm used to be one of management and control, but now we're in a different age and we have to do it differently because it's about unleashing people's potential. And it's kind of a continuation of some of the work that his father did with mm-hmm. the eighth habit, which is to communicate. No, that's the wrong. I almost said it. Eighth habit, to find your voice and then inspire others to find theirs. And so that's part of what he's building on. And I think that it goes back to beautifully what you're saying. Like with Liam, people will never find their own voice or feel inspired to find it if they don't feel accountable mm-hmm. for what it is that they're working towards.
That's right.
So employees mm-hmm. don't have accountability.
No, they have, right? Responsibility. They have
responsibility. But if you can make employees or children owners in a way, and like shift the paradigm so that they own things, then you're mm-hmm. unleashing more of them because they become accountable.
Right.
Am I saying that right?
Yes. Now, but let me go back to the employer. A lot of, because I've wrestled with this for years and tried to figure this out. But I often said, and I bet you there are people out there listening saying, well, no, I'm an employee and I'm accountable for those things. You're right. You are accountable to do those things because the consequence is you getting fired if you don't do them.
Right.
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 Right. But you aren't accountable on the larger scale for the business overall and the actions that the consequences that would happen if you don't fulfill those actions.
Right.
So that level, so there is like, there's like an overall accountability and then you can give some responsibility. And within that, they may have their own type of accountability. For example, if I'm an employee, then I am accountable to make sure that I bring home enough money so that my family can be fed. I am accountable mm-hmm. for that.
Right. Right.
But that is towards my family, accountability towards my family. That's not accountability towards the company going up the other way. Right. So there can be accountability and responsibility at the same time in two different contexts that we bleed together, that we get confused. I'm going to say that.
That's a really great point. That's okay. A really, really great point.
All right. Okay. Now, scripture time.
Cool. This is why you need a whole book.
I know. It's really hard to explain. Right. But you got to throw in examples. And I think people naturally understand it when these examples are thrown in. Go to D&C 101. Doctrine and Covenants 101. Verse 78.
Okay. 78. Why am I singing
read that?
It? Oh my gosh, I forgot we were recording for just a second. That's embarrassing. Because I would do that in conversation, but I don't usually do it when we're recording.
That's all right. Okay. We love who you are.
This happens in scripture study a lot. Somebody will like just sing the verse. It's my turn to read. Okay.
That's good. Will you sing 78, please?
No, but I will read it.
Okay. Sounds good.
I got to do old lady eyes. That every man may act in doctrine and principle pertaining to futurity according to the moral agency which I have given unto him. That every man may be accountable for his own sins in the day of judgment. Okay, I totally want to look up accountability right now.
Right. And if you look up accountability in
the topical guide, so it's not, yeah.
It's almost all... is that the word? I did this, and I think it's almost all in relation to the United Order. Every single time except for one, if I remember correctly. So it's really actually not used in the context that we're trying to figure out. So that makes it difficult to do. Okay. However,
well, the topical guide doesn't do that. The topical guide's got some interesting stuff that it's connected to. Okay, anyway, go. You make your point. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. So who can anyone else be accountable for your sin, Julie?
No. By the way, in the topical guide, the things connected with accountability actually have to do with consequences.
Consequences. Well, maybe I was thinking of a different word then as I looked that up. I'll have to go look at my notes again. And see, because I went to a word that maybe was related to this. And I thought, all of this is United Order stuff. Every single one except for one. So maybe that was a different word.
Death okay. for his own sin. Tell me now what thou hast done shall bear their iniquities. This his blood will I require. Shall not. It's about consequences. Okay, sorry. Keep going.
That's okay. Thank you. So we are accountable for our own sin. And people out there, listen, we are getting to the teaching aspect, and there's a huge correlation between the two. We just need to set those foundations. So keep going with us here. But
I'm sorry. I'm a slow learner. I've made it go slow.
No, you're not making it go slower than it needs to go. This is kind of the pace of trying. I mean, we're trying to learn a new concept overall and trying to plug our experiences into this and say, okay, does this fit? Does this work? And how does this work? And how would I redo this? So we are accountable for our own sins.
Okay.
Right?
Yes. Wait.
Article of faith number 2.
Yeah, we are accountable for our own sins and not for Adam's transgressions.
Not for Adam's transgressions, right? Okay, can anyone else be accountable for our sins?
So I am curious how we're going to define the role of the Savior in all this.
Okay.
Because we're accountable, but he paid a
consequence. He takes the consequences upon himself. Right.
So that we could, help me.
So we are accountable for our own sins. We either suffer the consequences or we repent.
Yep. And then then Christ takes on the consequences.
There you go.
Okay. So I'm understanding it right. We are responsible.
We are responsible for our own sins. We have one of those two choices. We suffer or we repent. And that is it. We cannot blame this. We can't say, oh my goodness, it was my husband or my wife that made me do that. Or Johnny.
Yeah.
Right. Or which is, by the way, so I mentioned this in a podcast previous about how I did a little bit of study overall in why we need a body before we go before God to be judged.
Right.
And I mentioned that, right? And this is one of the reasons why, is because we need to have a full recollection of everything, not only of our own guilt, but also of God's power to realize that, oh, God, you did not set me up to fail.
Mm-mm,
100%. This was all me that did these things. I cannot blame another person in the world or you, God, or anything. This is my choice and I made these choices. And
right.
I either suffered for them or I repented for them.
Right.
Right.
Right. That makes perfect sense.
Okay. So we are accountable for those things.
Yeah. I'm insecure enough to question everything right now, though, just so you know. Like, that's why when you said it, I said, I'm so insecure right now. I'm like questioning everything. So I'm like, yes, we're accountable. And then I'm all, aren't we?
Are we? Wait. Maybe he's taking me down a different road.
What's happening? Okay.
Next and there may be even several layers of responsibility if we think about this. For going back to the work example, I own the company. I give the responsibility to this person to do that. They may give the responsibility to someone else to do something, a subtask of that, right? And that there may be layers on down. That's why we have, you know, owners and CEOs and VPs and managers and then workers and et cetera.
Delegation of responsibility, not delegation of accountability.
You never hear that, do you? You never hear delegation of accountability because there is no such thing.
Right, right.
It doesn't exist.
That's so interesting. I've never... Okay, keep going.
Okay.
Blowing my mind.
Okay. Go to Alma 11, if you would. Okay.
Book of Mormon.
Oops, I was just there.
Alma
11.
11, yeah.
That almost reminds me, Julie, of the back to school specials. You know, they just sing oh, the, yeah. You know, they just sing the, like the bills, the,
yep.
What am I, you know, I'm just a bill. And then they go in and sing what it actually is.
And because life is a musical.
It is. Yes, it is. Let's look at verse 40 and 41, shall we? I'll read here.
Yes, please.
And he shall come into the world, being Jesus Christ. And by the way, this is Alma talking to Zeezrom, and he just schooled Zeezrom in his logical fallacies here. And so he says, Christ shall come into the world to redeem his people, and he shall take upon him the transgressions of those who believe on his name. And these are they that shall have eternal life, and salvation cometh to none else. They have to believe on his name. And salvation will come to none else. And really, in the end, did you believe on his name? I can't give that to another one to believe on his name for me.
So is believing something that you are accountable for or responsible for?
That's an accountability thing. Okay. Belief, your belief and what you believe is your will.
You're accountable for doing that.
You're accountable for that. He says, therefore, the wicked man remain as though there had been no redemption made, except it be for the loosing of the bands of death. For behold, that day shall come that all shall rise before the dead and stand before God to be judged according to their works. Now there's the believing and then there's the works. We're not going to get into that because they're in a way synonymous, but we'll just leave that for now. Okay. But the point is that we cannot, accountability we can't put off. Mm-hmm. And if you think about a child, at first they're not accountable for anything.
Yeah.
But then there's the age of accountability. And then, you know, let's say 18, they go off on their own and they're accountable for everything. So there really are two types of accountability. The first type of accountability is natural. If we want to live, we have to eat. There is no way around that. And what we eat and, you know, let's say we're an adult. Okay, let's take it from an adult perspective. If we want to live, we have to eat. No one can really force feed us.
Right.
I mean, yes, if you want to get into technicalities, you can be, you know, you can be in a coma and someone is feeding you. We're not doing that.
But what you're saying is like, you can't delegate your eating to someone else and then you reap the benefit of that.
Well, you can, and we do that all the time by going out to eat.
No. That's feeding you. That's not eating.
Okay.
You can't.
Okay. Very good. Yes. Then you are correct. Yes. Yep.
So like, it's interesting because I would have said you are responsible for eating, right? In my own mind, but no, because if you can't delegate a task, I'm going to define it now, according to what you're teaching us, as an accountability, like belief. You can't delegate belief. And therefore, you are not responsible for your belief. You are accountable for believing. Mm-hmm. Am I oversimplifying?
Yes. Yep. Keep going. Yep.
Am I oversimplifying though?
No.
Okay. No, that was it. That's all I had to say.
Okay.
I'm just saying, if you can't delegate it, then it's something you are accountable for.
Good.
Not something that you are responsible for.
Right. That is correct. You are. Right. So in the difference between feeding and eating, you can give someone else the responsibility to feed you, but what you eat, that is all you, or that you eat at all.
So I'm responsible for feeding my family.
Correct.
But the members of my family are accountable for eating.
For actually putting it in their mouth and eating it.
Yeah.
Rather than a Snickers bar every day, all the time for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right. Right.
Right.
So if I try and delegate my responsibility, that might be what actually gets ingested, let's be honest.
Okay. But they have the accountability to say, I'm not going to eat that because that is not healthy for me. I'm going to go make my own dinner.
Right.
And something more healthy, Mom.
Because they are responsible for the consequences.
They are
accountable.
Okay. Exactly. You got it. That's correct. That's correct. Okay. The other type of accountability is acquired accountability, as in a child acquires the accountability for their own sins at some point, like age 8, right? They acquire at some point, they go off into the world and they are 100% accountable for everything. Whereas when they were born, they were 100% accountable for nothing except to maybe breathe. And that's about it.
Okay, so not inherited, but acquired accountability.
Acquired.
Like you kind of, and that's a process almost, isn't it?
It is, or a decision, which can turn into a process. For example, if I decide I am going to get my license to drive, I am acquiring the accountability of driving, which includes putting gas in my car. Mm-hmm. If I don't do that, I can't drive. I mean, I can't give that responsibility to someone else, but I have to make sure that gas is in my car if I want to actually drive.
You can delegate the actual putting of gas in your car, just like you can delegate the feeding part, but you cannot delegate the eating part, or you cannot delegate the accountability for having a car filled with gas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because if, okay, you got that, right? Okay, good. So there are those two kinds. Now,
so acquired accountability. Okay.
So this is where it gets funky.
It's already been funky. It is already funky.
Okay.
This is not the moment that it gets funky.
It is because now is when we start to really apply it to real life. We've had examples and that's been good. But let me ask this.
It's already real life. You're saying I am about to make it harder. That just own what it, just be accountable. Okay. I'm just kidding.
We're gonna put this into real life and make this a little harder then. Okay.
Okay, let's go.
And you have actually answered this somewhat. What do we do when someone is not fulfilling their accountability?
Punch them in the face.
Okay, that's one thing.
Pray harder. Oh my gosh, when Liam is not fulfilling his accountability, what do I do? I don't strangle him though. Like this old trust and inspire thing.
Right. Like, okay.
How do you do it? Answer me.
There are two things that we can do, and they're both wrong. Number one, we can force them. We can try to hold them accountable, like you said earlier, right?
That's another way of looking at it,
right? We can force someone to eat. You open your mouth, we will stick that fork in there and you will eat this. That is wrong, right? We cannot take on that accountability. The second thing we can do is subsume it and say, you know what? I am taking on their ability to do this, and I need to make sure that it's me. And what we do, like you mentioned, when we subsume someone else's accountability, my mind changes, their mind changes, that it's no longer on their plate. Now it's on my plate. And we do that all the flooping time.
All the flooping time. I flooping almost did it last night when Todd and I were talking and he's like, get Liam's login for BYU's application. So that we could subsume. And luckily I had enough wisdom to say no.
No.
But I used the wrong word. I should have said, Liam is accountable for this.
Yes.
Not us. But instead, I'm like, this is his responsibility. No, this is his accountability, Kevin. Yes. I cannot subsume it by getting his login. Oh, man.
Okay. Let's take this a little step further here, okay?
Okay.
When children grow up and they go off, like Liam's doing, right? He's a senior. He's going to go off and be on his own. There, and I mentioned this, I think, on another podcast, but I wish I could remember who I have it somewhere. I could probably just pull it out of my drawer here. Old CDs that my wife and I used to listen to, and he's an LDS therapist, I think. And he would say the art of parenting is letting go. As they get older, we have to let go and let them take on their accountability. What we see so much these days is that parents hold on to the accountability for their children and are forcing them or subsuming their accountability. And the children who are now 18, 20, 25, 30 are not taking full accountability for their lives.
I mean, that literally is like helicopter parent.
Yes.
Like getting out. Oh my gosh. And that, I mean, that speaks to my soul because I agree with that in theory.
Yeah. But then when it comes down to it, it's like, dude, you got to fill this out. You got to get this done. You can't blame anyone else, dude. Okay. I'm going to make sure that you get these essays done. I'm going to make sure, right? The parent comes out and we subsume that accountability. Right.
So what you were talking about is that like these two crutches that we have of subsuming responsibility or trying to hold them accountable are the opposite of that.
Inspiring like, trust.
Opposite of trusting and inspiring our kids, which if we want to unleash their potential, we have to do. We don't want to have to continually like step in and I mean, that's so enabling, right? If we remove obstacles for them and remove consequences, we become an enabling parent.
Correct.
100%. If God did that for us, he would be an enabling God.
Right.
However, rather than nurturing growth.
However, that doesn't mean that God doesn't step in and help us every now and then, right?
Right.
Our request a lot of times because we have to ask for it. Then he says, okay, if he were to just step in all the time, say, let me take care of that for you. Let me take it. He now is subsuming our accountability. He has to help us understand how to be accountable and then how to say, hey, Father, I need some help here. Can you help me? I'd be happy. Yep. And how many times have we heard that God wants to bless us? We just have to ask for it.
Okay. But you know what's so interesting? So I actually had a conversation with Liam about this because I was really trying to get him in his moment of desperation to turn to Heavenly Father. Like I wanted him to see that this was an opportunity for him to turn to God. And his logic was sound, but this argument kind of made me go, and what he said to me was, Mom, Heavenly Father is not going to fix this because he wants me to use my agency to make decisions. And I used my agency and made the wrong decisions. And so he's like, he's not going to come in and help me now. And I'm like, huh, isn't that interesting? And so like, go ahead and respond to that. Bill, I'll tell you kind of my thought.
I think the logic is sound, but only to the degree that he talked about. I mean, he said he isn't going to fix it. Yeah. But what else can he do to help with the outcome? There are other things they can do than fix it, right? Okay.
Totally. And that was kind of what I said. Like his logic made sense. Like I loved that he was assuming, like, would that be responsibility or accountability? I mean, I don't know. Like he was hanging on to that, though, right? Probably both. But so when we think about God being an enabler, I think of enabling as removing obstacles. And he doesn't remove obstacles that are intended for our growth. He probably helps us to get past or over them, right? Like he gives us the energy and strength to surmount those obstacles. But I do think that there are times when he will come in and actually remove obstacles. But the reason he can justify doing that without subsuming accountability is that we've turned to him. We've fulfilled our responsibility, if you will, so that he can help us, you know, continue to hold on to that accountability, have a way, like clearing the path, I think is, you could use the word enable for both, meaning like he's an enabling God in that he removes obstacles.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But you could also use the word enable in that he is an enabling God in that he will clear the path for us sometimes when we turn to him.
That's good.
Would that be fair?
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot. Because I was going to say, because I oftentimes think of the word enable in the negative context rather than the positive.
There's a
context,
positive right? too. Yeah. I think both are true though. I think both have validity.
That's good.
Sorry, I didn't mean for that to get us off track at all, but it really did kind of.
No, that actually, that helps because when we think about someone enabling in the negative context, someone else, I need to think through this more, but I think what they're really doing is taking on or forcing the accountability in the negative context. And that's what enabling is.
Yeah.
I need to think about that more, but I think so. but I don't know.
I was thinking about it more as accountability, like, excuse me, that enabling is actually trying to subsume accountability.
Okay.
Because you're forcing
you're doing it for them.
Yeah. Cause you're doing it for them. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, sorry.
Good stuff. Okay. Yeah. Now, what does this have to do with teaching? Everything. And here's why. When the Sunday school ward, Sunday school president, when we were talking, here's what he said. He said that he has a Sunday school teacher, gospel doctrine teacher, who said, I want to make sure our ward members know the scriptures inside and out.
Oh, I think I see where you're going.
And so what does he do? He crams them full of his wisdom and his information.
So he is trying to subsume accountability. Their
accountability for learning.
Instead of inspiring them to keep their own, hold on to their own accountability.
That's it. Yeah. So what is our role as teachers then?
Our role as teachers is to inspire people to be accountable for their own learning.
You got it. Because we cannot force them to learn, period.
Yeah. So how would you approach teaching differently?
Exactly.
If you look with that paradigm.
Exactly.
Oh, Kevin, you know, it's so interesting. It's so interesting because I think about how often I have felt responsible. I'm using the word carefully, but it's the right word for teaching the best lesson and doing all of this because I also felt accountable for their learning.
Right.
Versus teaching and trying to give them the best lesson possible to inspire them to take more accountability for their own learning.
Right. Let's think of it.
I plan differently I plan differently with that paradigm. And you know, I think that I, without putting the words to it, have evolved to that space sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Understood that.
I'm so sure.
I think a lot of people are probably doing that better than they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think oftentimes for all of us, there's a temptation to subsume accountability. Mm-hmm. And so bringing it into our consciousness and being aware of it will help us do a better job of not subsuming responsibility for that and really intentionally inspiring them to be more accountable.
Good. Subsuming accountability.
Yes, assuming their own accountability. Yes.
So let's look at this from the learner's perspective. That means that the learner cannot blame the teacher for not learning.
And how often do we sit in a class and criticize and complain and blame the teacher for a dumb lesson? I didn't get anything out of that.
Right. It doesn't matter. In that moment, the learner has given the responsibility for teaching to that teacher to allow them to learn.
But they,
if that doesn't work for them, then that's up to the learner, not up to the teacher.
Yeah, who's the consequence going to hurt? Like, exactly. Who is the consequence going to affect? It's going to affect the individual learner.
The teacher's going to walk away and go, that was an awesome lesson. That was so good. And the learner's going to walk away saying, I didn't learn anything. Well, then, okay. And that may not be a bad thing, right? You may have sat in the class. You may not have learned anything, but that doesn't change the fact that the learner still needs to take accountability for their own learning. And maybe learn in a different way then, or maybe next time, maybe next Sunday when they go to church. It doesn't matter. It's still on the learner. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now let's flip that over to the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this. Because what this tells us, if we learn, if we look at it from this perspective, is that we can do our best. We can absolutely fail in teaching, or at least feel we failed in teaching, but we tried. That's all that we're expected to do.
Right, because learning can still happen.
Learning can still happen. And it, again, they just asked you to be responsible for teaching them for their learning for that hour, right? Okay, if nothing else, God's grace can can say, okay, let me help you here, or let me do this, or you know what? I know you didn't word it well, but I'm going to hit the spirit. The spirit's going to go over there and touch that person and make sure that they understood exactly what you meant to say and clear everything up for you. So I don't care if someone just got baptized. They can teach an incredible lesson, even though they may think, I don't know anything. It doesn't matter if you know everything. It doesn't matter. That has nothing to do with this. They are at that point giving you responsibility to help them learn. You're going to do your best. But if they don't, that's their thing. That's the learner's thing, not yours. So give yourself some grace.
So I hear you saying, and tell me if this is right, that it is okay to feel the weight of that responsibility, but it is not okay to take on the weight of the accountability.
Picture perfect. Yes. The way we now, understanding this, the way we teach can be completely different. It can be freeing, honestly.
Yeah.
The way we teach our children and deal with our children, completely freeing now that we understand this.
Oh my gosh. When you just said that, I'm like, okay, so now that I've been released from my state calling, that teaching calling,
yeah,
I really felt kind of this impression that I need to study differently so that I'm better prepared to help my children learn. But I have to be so careful that I am
very good
working to inspire them to take more accountability for their own learning in the scriptures instead of me trying to take accountability for making sure that they learn.
Right. So that's as hard. Yes, it is. So as we think about teaching our children, teaching a class, whatever, I think a lot of the question is not exclusively, but becomes less of what am I going to teach them and more of how am I going to inspire them to learn?
Okay. I got some work to do.
We all do. Because I'll tell you, even though I know this and understand this and I've been thinking about this for years, it's easy for me to fall in the trap of, okay, what am I? I'm given a topic. Okay, I'm going to go teach this. And it's easy for me to fall into that. But I even struggle with trying to turn that around and say, okay, this is just about inspiring here. I'm going to inspire them that the scriptures are the best thing in the world. And you need to be in this all the time. You need to be in the scriptures and the words of the living prophets all the time and soak it up and get to the point where you are excited to go read your scriptures, right? That, by the way, that is a possible thing, children.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And they will feel that and they'll go, huh, maybe I can pray for that. Or maybe I can do it until I feel that. And if my dad thinks that's a real thing, then that is. Then I'll tell you what we were trying to do in the first place. Rather than cramming it down, will happen so much faster and with so much more power than us trying to subsume or force it.
So true. So true. I can see the wisdom in that. And now I've got to figure out exactly how to do that appropriately.
Right. Right. And like every situation is going to be different.
Right. Right. And every home is going to be different. Mm-hmm. And every class dynamic is going to be different. Like the way that you apply this principle is going to look differently for everybody, I think.
Right.
Wow, Kev.
So how does the Sunday school president help the teacher who says, I want them, what does it say? I want our ward members to know the scriptures inside and out, and in this way, cramming it down their throat. How does he help them? Well, teach them about accountability and responsibility. Yeah. Although that's difficult to do, right?
It is difficult to do, except if I was that Sunday school president, I would probably go in and ask him, you know, what do you think you should do to be able to do that? And then open up a dialogue based on, you know, you got to understand where he's coming from first. If you understand his motivation and you disagree with his strategy, you still have to get into his motivation and build on what is good about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll feel like a profound disconnect when you go to give them a little bit of coaching.
Right.
But I think it's very appropriate to take out those same scriptures that you read even and say, who's accountable for their learning? It's them. Okay. So how do we approach this in a way that inspires them to take accountability for their own learning instead of us feeling accountable to get it all in.
Right.
Like, can we inspire them to love the scriptures instead of forcing them to listen to the scriptures? Or, you know, what's the fruit of the heart?
So do we not talk about facts then? Do we not talk about, you know, this is the doctrine of Christ and say, okay, what are the pieces of the doctrine of Christ? And how's that? I mean, do we not teach that then if it's just inspiring?
No. Don't you think that part of what inspires you to love the scriptures is being in the scriptures?
Yeah.
Like, part of it is that you teach it, you help it all, you know, fitly frame, whatever the word is, together. Like, making those connections is inspiring in and of itself. I just think that you do it from a perspective of, and like, this comes across in how you do it even, of asking questions more than you being the person to make all the points, getting them to think about application versus just disseminating information. All of those strategies, and we've talked about a lot of them in class before, or on this podcast before, all of those strategies really are, without putting words to it before, ways that you can help inspire people to take more accountability for their own learning versus just cramming it down their throats. Because we know that strategy doesn't work. People are incapable of hearing when you start to cram. Mm-hmm. They actually put up walls.
That psychologically, that is what happens. When it starts cramming, there's like too much. That's not where my headspace is. I gotta block it out.
Overstep. Yeah.
Yep. I remember we had a missionary, like a preach my gospel class for the older youth in our house one time, and we were talking, and I pulled out the scriptures, and we were talking about a particular verse, and we were trying to talk about a particular principle, I think it was. So we were going through it, but I went into like one or two verses, and I just dove into it. And I would ask him questions. They're like, "Whoa, I never was." No. We got to the end, and 15 minutes later, we had only covered one or two verses, and that was it. And someone said, "I had no idea there's that much in two verses." That, to me, that was the ultimate compliment, because I thought, awesome. Now you know that we have all these verses in the scriptures and they're just the same, and it feels good, and don't you want to go learn all about that now? Yeah. Okay, good. So keep it up.
I'm hearing you say that one of the strategies is maybe to be less motivated by covering more, and more motivated to sometimes, because I've experienced that exact same thing with Liam, where he has said that, "Mom, that's how I want to study the scriptures." And it's hard to make that happen every time, where you just take a verse and you dissect it and you really, really get into it. But he's like, "Wow, that's how I want to learn. That's how I want to study." And so I definitely agree with you. And I think that sometimes we get focused on trying to cover more, and so we don't necessarily consider that depth might be not, and it's not you going deep, it's you going on a journey together to understand things on a different level.
Right. I think the curriculum is there to say, here are the things you could cover. Not that you need to cover it all.
Exactly.
Right. Take one piece of that and go deep in it. Inspire them that they can feel the Spirit as intently as they did in your class, that they can do that on their own, that they can learn so much from the scriptures that they had, that has been hidden from them this whole time, and they can go discover it themselves. Yes. And it can improve their life because they are the ones who discovered it and it sunk deep into their heart.
That's so awesome. That is so awesome.
So let me take a look at some of my notes here. Let's go to 2 Nephi 4:15.
Okay.
We've been going for a bit, so we're going to have to wrap up here, but I'll end with 2 Nephi 4:15.
Love it.
Okay. Are you there?
Yep.
Will you read that, please?
"And upon these, I write the things of my soul and many of the scriptures, which are engraven upon the plates of brass. For my soul delighteth in the scriptures, and my heart pondereth them and writeth them for the learning and the profit of my children."
For the learning and the profit of my children. so that his children will be motivated to learn, not so that I can, he doesn't say, write it to them so that I can teach them to my children and cram it down their throats. So that I can make sure they learn this. No, so that when they feel inspired, they know who to turn to. And he even says that later on, right? Who to turn to so that they can go and learn this. And it's here and they know it's available. I think that's honest, now that I think about it, that's one of the things we as teachers need to do, is we need to show them what's possible and show them that this is available. This is available in all the scriptures. We can learn this much in all of it. If we really want them to understand it inside, are we arrogant enough to think that teaching the youth, teaching children at church, or teaching adults two times a week for 45 minutes each will really have a major, major impact on their life every single time?
Right, right. Wouldn't it be nice?
Right. Because we're forcing that change, right? No. No, we can't do that. What we can do, though, is inspire and help them make sure that they understand it is their accountability to learn.
Yeah.
And treat them in that way as well.
Yes. Wow. It's so scary to me, because here I have a senior that's going to go off. He's going to go to a little bit of school. He's going to go on a mission. And I don't have very much time to do this, Kevin.
No, but part of the thing is that he will go off and he will fail. Right. We have to anticipate he will fail in some way. That's the part of learning. And we as parents can't dive in and subsume their accountability in that. We have to say, what are you going to do about that? And if they ask for help, well, can you give me some ideas? Yeah, I'd be happy to give you some ideas, but I'm not going to cram it down your throat. I'm not going to make you do it. I'm not going to force you to do it. Here are some ideas. It's your choice, because you are accountable for you now.
My gosh. It's so hard, isn't it? It's so hard.
Okay. Well, that's enough for today, I think.
It's enough. Are you kidding? I can't do much more of this, Kev. My head's exploding.
I'm done. The day, rest of the day, I'm done. Yep. That's it.
I need a nap.
Okay. So I hope this just didn't comfuddle. Is that a word? Comfuddle everyone's brains too much.
You're making stuff that up.
Yeah. I like to make things up. But I hope it didn't confuse you so much, but that you actually were able to get something out of this, to understand the difference between accountability and responsibility, and our role with both accountability and responsibility at different times, in different contexts, and the importance of making sure that people understand their accountability and how we can help with that. So, I mean, now, again, like you said, a whole book on this would be, there's enough here for a book easily, right? And then you take this into politics, you take this into cultural matters of a community, you take this into law, you take this into, oh my goodness, and then my brain really explodes.
I'm not there yet. I'm a new student of this concept. don't overwhelm me.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you would, share this with someone who needs to underlearn accountability and responsibility. We all do.
Did you just say you need to underlearn?
No.
That's no. What you said.
Did I? Maybe.
You said who needs to understand.
Understand, underlearn. Okay, underlearn. Well, you know what? I'm going to make that a new word, and I'll come out with a definition in the next episode of what underlearn means. All right?
Do it.
Cool. Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.